I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, listeners. Yes, this podcast is still going. And yes, the film that people kindly donated to is out on my YouTube channel. Just look up Marek Larwood and Vlogmare and you can watch it all. Half an hour, just over long. Pretty average. Thanks everyone who donated. And if you would like to donate to my future projects, just visit my website, mareklarwood.com, and you can do it on there. Anyway, what is this podcast about? I went to see my friend Paul Allen. He's been on two podcasts previously. And we talked about what to do when putting your films into film festivals. I've not done this, so I mainly ask questions about the experience of film festivals and how they have changed over the years and whether they're still relevant. I'll also put a link to one of the films that Paul made called My 70s Vlog on the Facebook site and tweet about it as well. So that's it. Enjoy the podcast. Paul's here after this. Anyway, Paul, you have made quite a lot of, you've made a feature film, you've made several short films, and you know about festivals. So I'm going to come at this from the perspective of someone who just completed a film. I am an idiot.
So I've just got to imagine you're an idiot.
It's going to be difficult, but try and imagine.
That is a big stretch, right?
Do you want some time?
Okay, I've done it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, right. So imagine... You imagine I'm an idiot, okay, and I finished my film, and I don't know how to go about film festivals. How do you go about all this business?
So I guess length of film is the first thing. So with your making a short film or feature film, that's a big, obviously the first major distinction. And your film's about half an hour long, isn't it?
So basically, I've made the mistake of not being in either camp.
You are perfectly between both camps. There are some festivals which would take something along, about half an hour long.
They'd be pretty desperate, but they want my film.
But not that many. I mean, that's the reality of it. I think, especially in terms of, you've got to think about from the programmer's point of view, especially if it's a short film festival, they're looking to get as many films in the programme. They've got a programme certain lengths of time, and each one of those programmes will represent a filmmaker and also potentially represent an audience. So if you've got, in half an hour, you could have, you know, lots more shorter films, and they could all be bringing separate audiences and all creating buzz about the festival. So from their point of view, it's a lot less likely. So that's the first thing, I think, about the length of it. So obviously you were doing a short film or a feature film. And then...
If you were doing a feature film, be honest, you'd probably not listen to this podcast for advice. Let's just say...
Stop listening
doing
now.
A short film.
Short film.
Because it's a real murky world. I remember you showing me that brilliant film, which is called
Official Rejection.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, that was about people putting a film into. I think that was a feature film, wasn't it? Into festivals.
Yeah.
And basically, all these hopes and dreams, and then all basically being quashed quite quickly. I mean, and the experience for me was, I mean, I remember the very first time, the very first short film I made, I put it in for Cannes, and I was genuinely disappointed. I was genuinely disappointed when I didn't get into Cannes. Knowing what I know now, I mean, it's pretty comical. I mean, to get into the short film selection for Cannes, that is, I mean, you have to have produced something pretty staggering. I mean, I don't know how many in selection, it's probably about 10. Interestingly enough, this is just a side note, there's something called Short Film Corner at Cannes. And to get into Short Film Corner in Cannes, when people say, I've got into Cannes, and they've got into the Short Film Corner, they haven't got into Cannes. Short Film Corner is a paid, you pay, I think it's like €80, and you get your film put in a catalogue, which is a digital archive, and people can go and watch it. And I have seen, I think it's a point of frustration for me and probably many other filmmakers, and they'll put on Facebook, just got into Cannes. And they just got into Short Film Corner. They didn't even get in because there's no selection criteria.
So you just write lie. What do you write? Lie underneath that Facebook thing? Mute for 1 month?
Yeah, I just report them.
Offensive posts?
Yeah. And they get banned from Facebook.
Spreading hate speech.
Yeah. So I think there's lots to say about it, but I think... getting into festivals, I mean, maybe historically, maybe that's probably a useful thing to talk about, first of all. So when I first started, so that was my first start, completing it for Cannes, didn't get into Cannes. But so I was in the day where you would apply with an application form online, and then you would have to send in a DVD, so you'd have to post a DVD.
It's about 15 years ago.
So this is about 2007, 2008, yeah, it's about 10, 11 years ago. So it was on the cusp of a change in the way film festivals worked. So you'd fill out an application form, you'd burn a DVD, you'd send it off. So it's quite a lot of work, but that's interesting because that's also a barrier to entry in terms of people doing this. And then you'd heard whether you're successful or not, normally not. And then if you were successful, then you'd have to send them a copy of your film on a recognised tape format. So you'd have to then get it a duplication of your film, and it would normally, if it was a big festival in those days, it would be Beta SP, one of these formats. But that's expensive. I mean, those tapes were like £20. And you'd then have to send them a tape, that'd have to be insured, they'd insure it, and they'd often send it back. There's a lot of stuff, and of the era before that was obviously film, so then you were talking about sending in film stock, a film print of your film, and then have to track it. That's worth a lot. And then it might be sent to other festivals. You know, a lot of logistics around that.
Nowadays, what is it like now?
So now that changed. The first thing that changed was with Outerbox. That was a big development. So it was an online form. You filled it in once, and then all the details would get propagated. So you could send the same details to every festival. So you don't have to put in the synopsis, the title, the cast, the crew, the talent every time. You put it in once, and then you could just click to different festivals. So it saved a lot of time. So it was already, but that already reduced the barrier to entry. But then other people joined the game. There was Film Freeway, Short Film Depot, a few others like this. It all came along. But then the other huge change then was with online submissions. So that changed everything. So then suddenly you're in a situation where you not only got with Outerbox and these other platforms, which make it very easy to submit, you don't have to send them anything anymore. So, you know, I used to spend a lot of time going up to the post office, and so now you just click away, and then you've got a lot of festivals which are free, so the barrier to entry, and the consequence of that is, and I've talked to festival programmers when I've been there, they say they're just absolutely inundated with, and especially short films, because basically, and of course on the other side of this, you've got productions that suddenly become a lot easier. People are shooting stuff which looks really decent.
Well, I'm not.
You're not, but some people are. But then that used to be a differentiator. So back in the day, it would be like, okay, if they're shot on film, there's already, that, like, they've put money, time, resources in. This has hit a certain barrier. It was either DV or it was film. But now people are shooting on 5Ds, cameras, you know, camera phones, and it's all looking pretty decent.
These people shouldn't be allowed opportunity to express themselves. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. That's exactly, in no way misconstrue what I've said. That's perfect, yeah.
If anything, freedom of speech and creativity is actually hampered the process, right?
That's exactly what I was saying. Yeah.
So you've got you've made a film, we've looked at one of these things. Sometimes you don't, you have to, you've got to pay a certain amount, have you, to join these platforms. But they're sort of fading away, aren't they? Didn't some go bust?
So with Outerbox, weirdly enough, with Outerbox, they came in from quite a commercial angle. I think they were bought by, now I can't remember the order of it, I think they were bought by IMDb and then Amazon bought IMDb. So those three are all linked up together, basically. But with Outerbox were quite commercial and they basically went for a slight monopoly angle, which was, they had like, we have to have an exclusive deal with this with the festival. They can't submit through other platforms, various things, but they tried to sort of lock it down and had to have fees and lots of percentage and stuff like that. And it obviously, for filmmakers, it was really annoying. And there was a bit of an uprising of people. I think there was a site called, I don't know, it was specifically dedicated to Without a Box and how it basically made, they'd taken over and caused a lot of fees and various things and just made, gummed it all up. And it just wasn't really in the spirit of filmmaking. It's like they were trying to sort of make money out of this. Anyway, but you know, literally, I think it was about 6 months ago, they are no longer in business. And Film Freeway, which is one which is much more, has the ethos of filmmakers, it's low budget. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of free festivals. It's just a much, and it's a really well curated, really well built site. So I would submit through there most of the time now. So that's changed.
And in terms of you deciding what festivals to submit to, trying to work out which ones are good, and then there's a thing where some demand international premieres, some demand sort of global, just UK premieres,
yeah, so
or whatever.
Yeah, you get different levels of premiere. So I'll probably get this wrong, but it was, I think, something like international premiere, national premiere. No, there's another distinction between international. I can't remember, but basically it's like worldwide, and then you can have European, you can get like down to state premiere, like in America and various things. And that used to be more precious, but I've noticed that, because I had a bit of a gap where I wasn't submitting, and then I came back and I noticed some of these things had changed. And I think especially with short films, they were much less precious about that. But there's still the prestige top level festivals, Venice, some of these, you will, even at short films, it has to be a premiere, otherwise you're not gonna get in. And if it's been online, it's game over.
So if you do, for your short films, you've made sort of quite a different array of films. You've made documentaries, sort of factual-ish, sort of philosophical, sort of more social commentary films, and as well as narratives. How do you pick, what's your mentality when you sort of think, oh, I'm going to put it to the festivals? What do you sort of think, oh, I'm not prepared to pay this much? What goes through your mind when you pick them?
Well, yeah, you do need to have a philosophy because, quite frankly, there are hundreds of festivals. I mean, there's probably five happening every day. I mean, like more than that.
And you can end up paying loads of money.
You pay loads of money. And I think, broadly speaking, this is probably fair, is the fact that American festivals generally will charge. European festivals are much less likely to charge. They have more of a sort of artistic...
Integrity.
Integrity, what's the word? Ethos behind them. So things like Cannes, you know, Cannes is free to... You know, me and my producer used to joke about the fact that Cannes was free to enter, but the Swansea Bay Film Festival was £50. You know, it's like this is, but and the UK, as in many other things, it sort of sits slightly between them. So there's some festivals which will be free and others which are charging. And some of them, you know, some of them do charge quite a lot, and it's quite offensive. You think they do need money to run, and I have no problem with a sort of £5, £10, €5, €10 admin. You know, and also as a slight filter, so people aren't just sort of wildly clicking, just submitting everywhere. Because that's, I spoke to a festival program, and they said we literally have the charges. This was in the Czech Republic. We literally have the charges just to stop getting so many submissions because it becomes completely unworkable. We can't work it. So I have no problem with that. So I think you know, when Film Freeway, I think you can set different criteria. So I would set it up to, I think, free, especially for a short film, up to like, I don't know, €10. I think, unless it's a specific one I want to go for some reason. And then other things I would look for are length of running. That's often a sign of whether they're, how good they are. You know, I think I'd often put like 5 years onwards.
Oh, in terms how long festivals have been going for?
There's a lot of festivals you start up, have 1 year and then close down. Because you want to, and then another big thing is whether you can attend or not. You know, whether it's likely to attend, is it somewhere you might want to go or to visit? And also you're more likely to get into a festival which is you're also likely to attend, because obviously the festival want you to attend, it's good for the festival. So if I'm applying for film festivals in Brazil, they know it's very, very unlikely I'm going to be going there. So that's not so much in their interest because they want to have filmmakers there. So you know, so European ones. And then there's other considerations. So, for example, if you want to certain awards, so like BAFTA. So if you want to be considered for BAFTA, you have to, it has to be a BAFTA recognised festival, and like BAFTA Cymru in Wales here, and Oscar nominee. If you want to be considered for an Oscar, obviously this is, you know, far reaches of things, but you have to be in an Oscar recognised festival. So these are, there's certain marks about what is quality or not. And then, but then you've got other things. You know, some festivals are just, you know, you hear about, they're just really lovely. You know, I went to one in Italy a couple of years ago, and it was like a village,
what was that called?
Concorto. It was like a village festival, all open air screenings. It's just like a really great ethos, you know, and just really, really lovely. And you think, you know, this is just a great experience, you know, and you think that's, it's a really well-run festival. And I've been to others where you just think this is, you know, there's just no sense of, there's no sense of the love of film being behind this. This is just about making money, or there's some other agenda. And there are definite festivals where there is an agenda and they are there to make money. Because as I say, like if they've got submission fees and they're getting thousands of people, you know,
that, do the math.
Do
a math at home.
And you can basically make an awful lot of money. And there are festivals, you know, I think the Swansea Bay Film Festival was one. In a case in point, it was, you know, marginally leaning on towards, I think it was fraud, basically, you know. And it got caught up, and there's a video on YouTube of people attending the festival. People coming across from, like, America.
The Swansea Bay Film
Festival. Film Festival, and it's like, there's nothing here. They're going to screening. There's nobody there. Well, in official rejection, there was cases of that. And it's like, well, these are just. But then, as I say, on the other side, you've got other festivals being, you know, run by volunteers just for the love of film, and you think, wow, this is, you know, fantastic, and it's a really great experience. But
what has been your experience? So you've submitted the film, done all that. You don't have to wait about 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. 6 months.
So I
just say stop. 7 months.
So, I'd say on average, probably the least. I mean, if you do a late submission, probably the least is probably 6 weeks, 2 months. But I think the last film I did, the vlogging film I made, I think I finished it in February, and I think I started to hear, or the first festival I got into was September, I think. It's a long lead time, and that's a big consideration, because especially that was quite zeitgeisty about.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was made of.
And so this is a film you made, which I'll link on the Facebook page, called My 70s Vlog on your channel. Is it called Paul Allen, your channel? Or
yeah,
look at My 70s Vlog, Paul Allen. And it's a film that I did on the Isle of Wight. We tried to make a vlog using 1970s equipment on the Isle of Wight. And so with that, for example, it's a sort of a documentary, but quite a zeitgeisty thing.
Yeah.
And you submit that to how many festivals?
Loads. I mean, the reality is, and you don't often hear people talk about it, but it is brutal. And it's basically, you apply to loads, and then, you know, on a weekly basis, you're basically getting rejections. And I think, well, maybe that's not the reality for some people, but it's certainly been the reality for me and other filmmakers I know. Actually, it's really hard to get to festivals. I think that just has to be said. And I think you... as I say, like the first one I went to, you know, not getting into Cannes, it's like this, you know, I now know how difficult it is to get in. It's like, and so when you do get into festivals and you know, slightly bigger festivals, it's, you know, it's really, really exciting. But I think you have to be ready for the, because ultimately it's, and there's not much rhyme or reason to it. You know, you can not in to get into some very, very small festival and get into somewhere much bigger. It's not like there's any rationalisation. And I think this festival, I said to him, I went to in Prague, you know, I've read to the programmer, he said, you know, to get into this festival.
What was that called?
Prague Short Film Festival. Yeah. And he said, to get into the festival, you just have to have someone who really loves your film. You know, that's basically, someone has to gun for your film.
And what film got in there?
That was All My Happy Friends. That was a short film. But that was like 2.5 minutes. That was a, you know, something about length. But that's interesting. You know, so often they'll have a pre-screening of all the films. So it will go out to like 10, 15 people. They'll just, you know, hammer through all these films, and then they'll come back with a sort of short list, and then they'll discuss them and stuff like that. And you can see in that context how that would work. Somebody's going to have to fight your corner for that film because they've just got so many of them. And I think you have to just be aware of that. That is the brutal reality of it. And it's...
Expect rejection.
Expect a lot of rejection, and don't have to take too much from it. But I think at some point, you obviously, if you're getting into nowhere, then... but it can...
And take
it,
a look, give up.
It's a difficult one. It's difficult. When do you give up, or when? How much do you keep pushing? Because I've...
You asking me directly?
I don't know. This and that, yeah.
So you got into... It's 3 months later. You made your film. Guess what? You got onto the bloody festival, mate.
Yes.
What happens next? What's a typical festival experience? I suppose they're all different, aren't they, really?
But first of all, they'll ask for... I mean, this is another thing you have to be ready for if you're going to go for festivals. You have to be ready with a lot of stuff. So you will have to have a synopsis, especially when you're applying. You'll have a synopsis of different lengths. Whatever synopsis length you write, they'll want one which is a different length. You know, you've got a 40-worder, you'll need a 50-worder, a 30-worder, a 10, a log line. So basically you need to, like my process now is I'll just get all this stuff listed on a online document so I can just copy and paste it. So for the festival, they'll then want they'll want a synopsis, they'll probably want a few stills, good stills, which feeds back into production because you realise that when you're making the films now how important
always forget that is. To get so
you always forget it when you're stressed. It's like it comes back to bite. Often like a director's commentary on the film.
Oh really?
Yeah, director's headshot, websites, various things, and then send the material. And then, I mean, these days again, it's a lot easier. You would send them a digital file. Best case scenario, it would be like a, getting technical, but it would be like a H.264, which is not too easy. Most editing suites can produce. Slightly more difficult, like a ProRes, you'll need an Apple computer to produce one of those. But if it's a higher level festival, you'll need a DCP, a digital cinema package, which is the recognised format for cinema projectors.
And how did you get a DCP?
Well, again, this has changed, but 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe longer, this would have been, you know, you would have to go to a specialist company and say, yeah, that's going to cost... When I did my feature film, people were talking about, oh, that's going to cost you, like, you know, $5,000 or something like that.
Wow.
It's all very specialised. But as with anything, you know, this is... Filmmakers sort of, you know, took it into their own hands, and then they're now open source solutions. So I think the one I've used is OpenDCP. I think there's another one called EasyDCP, and it's becoming much easier, so you can produce...
That sounds quite easy, EasyDCP.
It's easier than the anything else. So I think that's made it a lot easier. And so I've, but even that's a little bit technical because then you've, I could get into technicality, but it's technically 5-channel audio, which is Dolby audio. So you've got to know something about the stereo.
That's the problem, is that you forget that you've got to properly mix your sound for cinema, which is a big skill, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah, so you've got to be aware of that. So, but anyway, so you'll send them the file. But they say back in the day, it would have been sending them a film reel or sending them a tape. And getting a duplication of a tape, which was not a cheap, cheap job. And then they'll contact you whether you want to attend or not. That's the next normally. And then, again, it's a fairly obvious indicator about the quality of the festival. If they're willing to pay for your travel and accommodation, then you know it's probably less likely to be a money making scheme.
So you've had a few when they pay for your
I mean, I've never more accommodation and food is more likely. And I've had, but if you get into a good festival, the British Council will pay for your, they'll give you a subsidy, like a grant to go, and then they'll pay for your travel as well.
That's great.
But that's only, that's only happened to me once, but you know, that's higher level festivals.
And the better the festival, the more chance you've got of, like, you know, people wanting to get off with you and stuff at the festival.
That's a statistical fact. Yeah. Well, that's what they said in that official rejection thing. Do you remember that? And that guy was saying about how about all the, you know, experiences at festivals. But I don't know.
What did he say?
He just said he seemed to have lots of liaisons at film festivals, but
a lot of people.
That's less so at Sci-Fi London. I have to be honest with you.
A lot of people are making films just to get off with other people. Then.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Uh-huh. That's not what you did, though, is it?
No.
So, what have been your experiences like? So, wasn't there a film festival where they said they wanted to do a Q&A as part of the film festival?
So that's fairly standard, standard fare. So if you're going there, then you have to be prepared for that. So then you'll do a Q&A after the film. And then often festivals, then you'll have, well, it depends on the festival, that you can have a couple of screenings, so you have to do a couple of those. And then...
They better be good sandwiches for making you do that.
Yeah, you've got to be ready for it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of that, but that's kind of par for the course. But obviously, I think you have to see it from the film. I think you have to see it from the presenters, the organisers' point of view about how they are coming from it. You know, I say lots of volunteers, they're trying to make an event which people want to come to, and having the filmmakers there talk about the film, meeting the filmmakers, is obviously a big thing. And I think it's another sign of a good festival. If they make the filmmakers feel at home and they make them feel part of it, it also makes you want to go back there, you know, and you want to be. And I think
what have been your favourite festivals that you've been to then, you've submitted stuff to and been to?
I think Sci-Fi London was brilliant. I mean, I think that was great. You know, just a real community sense of just a lot of love for the film, and they've just, you know, it's just really.
Did you go off anyway?
And then other festivals. I'm trying to think. So I went to, I mean, I guess things like weather. I mean, like, as I say, I went to Prague last year. It was a really well organised, really lovely festival. It was also bitterly cold, so it was a little bit bleak. But it was a really, really great festival. And actually but it was really well programmed as well, just like some real attention to the films they picked. It was really, the thing is, the good ones, I've been to a few good ones like that, I just went to a documentary festival last year in Eindhoven, and that was really great. And I probably don't want to name some of the bad ones I've been to, but I think the case of basically turn up and there's no audience. It's some kind of ramshackle setup, and it's not been. As I say, they're not looking. If people have gone out of the way, they made a film and they've come there and they sent the film and done, and they've attended the festival, and then and especially no audience. I mean, that's the main thing. But it's a challenge. I mean, getting people to watch, especially short films, people are not. I think probably on the continent it's more that's easier.
So do you think? Right, we've vlogged me. I just put it straight online because it was, you know, good enough to enter any festivals. But do you think, is it worth just putting short films online instead of going to festivals? What's the benefit of doing it?
I think that's a really good point, because I think it's something I've thought about a lot, because when I started doing this, I'm no kind of veteran, but it was just during an interesting transition period in the film industry. That was not a possibility. I mean, like, I think, you know, YouTube, when did YouTube start? 2005, I think. But it was not, you couldn't watch the quality was, I think, you know, HD only came in quite a lot later. So it really wasn't an option to get an audience. And especially before YouTube, there was absolutely no other way to get an audience apart from film festivals. You know, you weren't really going to get on TV. So, I mean, I think that's a stark difference. So there was no other way to watch a film apart from film festivals. And as you say, like, YouTube is a massive audience. And I think that is, I think in many cases, I did really hesitate with that last, the vlogging film. Because I think, and I did feel like I slightly missed the zeitgeist, you know, with that, because it was much more sort of online relevant. But at the same time, I think the only thing which I became aware of was the fact that they still have some industry cachet in terms of, if you're applying for funding and various things and you have to put your CV in and to show your CV is kind of ticking over and you're doing things, well, I mean, the reality is it has as much, it's as valid as anything else, but I think if you put on there, you know, released on YouTube, it's a bit like, you know, straight to DVD thing, you know, it had a sort of connotation. But
so if you're applying for some of the grants to make, if your short film is a step to, like for many people, a step towards making a feature, and in order to fund that feature, you're going to need to raise money and raise grants, then you can always put it on YouTube, which, you know, at a later date.
Yeah.
But if you've got loads of awards from ceremonies and or awards from festivals, at the time you've been into festivals, you're more likely to get those grants, which could be crucial in making your film.
I think it's much more compelling. And I think especially, I mean, more so if it's a bigger festival. And I think that's definitely worth saying. I mean, you'll see films online where they've got loads of laurels, the leaf jobbers, which have the thing.
So this is that thing where so they give out, for every festival, they get a laurel and you can put it on your screen.
Yes, but as with anything, people realise that looks like prestige. That looks like a prestigious film. So you'll see films plastered with them, and then you zoom in and you realise it's
Brian's Bum Festival.
I mean, literally, but Brian's Bum Festival would be more prestigious than some of the things.
Brian's Bum Festival.
Yeah, they represent almost nothing, and you have never heard of them. And I think that's
sorry, Brian, if you're listening.
He does it for the love of film.
That's another listener gone.
Bye, Brian.
He's not going to sponsor this.
But I think that is an issue. So I think this whole idea of and going to lots of festivals and I became, you know, when we did our feature film, we didn't apply to a lot of festivals because we thought actually these are not going to do anything for us. No one's ever heard of them, and it's going to be a lot of time, effort, and money, especially with the feature film, to enter it at that stage. And what's it really going to do for our career or anything? And actually, it's only bigger festivals which people recognise. So, and that's another thing. I mean, I think it's less relevant now, but there's an order effect in terms of when you apply for festivals, which is much more relevant if you've got the premier status issue in your mind. It's basically you want to go for your very best festivals first, which are going to require premier, and then you sort of work yourself way down. The problem is you don't quite know where your film stacks up in the order of things. You're sort of trying to find your way, and by the time you've established the fact that you're not going to get into a lot of the higher tier festivals, which is, you know, going to be half of the course for most people, then you could have wasted 6-7 months already, because then you have to do another rotation of the film festival circuit, in which case your career and everything and life has moved on. So it becomes this a bit of a trying to, or you can see it's like hedging your bets about where you do. I say it's less relevant now with short films because they don't seem to be so caring so much about premier status. But it used to be much more of a tactical thing.
And when you go to the festival, is it just basically other filmmakers watching each other's films?
It can be, and I think that can be the worst of it. And I think I have been to festivals where there's a screening and it's just me and another person. The other person is the other film festival person in the screening, and it's their mates. And there's something massively depressing about that. But as I say, I think there's probably a cultural difference. So I think in this one in Italy I went to 2 years ago, it was quite stark. I mean, it's obviously glorious weather, but they're open air screenings in this kind of village, in this big plaza. It was all pretty lush.
And you definitely high chance of getting off with someone.
It was really nice, but the weather's really good. But it was really noticeable. The audiences were massive. I mean, it was like probably like 100 people, and I was really thinking. And it was quite an arty festival. They were really arty films. I mean,
the more people,
I was struggling.
The more chance, percentage wise, there is to find someone to go off with. I mean, you can shake your head, Paul, but a lot of people are listening to this thinking, all right, I'm not really interested in making films. I just want to try and get off with people.
That's a different podcast.
Well, it's probably this one. I don't know. People stopped listening to this now a long time ago. So worthwhile, you decide. It's up to you, basically.
Yeah, I think so. But I think it can be, I mean, I think there's a side note. Is that it can be quite, I think when you're, like, I'm quite indie orientated, and I think you are as well. Like, you do yourself a lot of stuff yourself, and you're not really connected with the industry that much. Then I think going to these places can be quite invigorating. I mean, it really makes you feel like, oh, and you're talking to other filmmakers, and they're talking about, and I think they talked about this on this documentary. Like, you all know you're all doing other jobs, you've got other things on, but for that moment, you're all just purely filmmakers, and it's about the films, and there's something. As naff as that sounds, there is something quite invigorating about that. And
it's like comedy, I think, because I used to come from a comedy background and doing the festivals. If you're a performer, no matter what level you are in, you're in some sort of club as a performer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're entitled to talk about stuff. So if you're a filmmaker, and I really like talking about cameras and gear and stuff like that, then the best place to have those conversations where people are actually interested.
And you're not boring them there.
Yeah, people, you said, oh, I'm going to think about getting this camera. And someone's excited and they're enjoying it. Oh, thank God. I can speak to someone about cameras and they're not looking at me like I'm an idiot.
Well, that's exactly it. And they really want to know about it.
Maybe get off with it.
Well, the camera gig, I wouldn't.
And just say, listen, we know. Listen, we clearly like cameras. We like films. Let's just get off. what I'm doing here is this is, people might think, oh, this is a bit cruel and this idiot's going off piste, but I'm, it's basically a B plot. I'm adding a B plot to this podcast to create that sort of, what's the word?
Tension.
Shouldn't have said qua. Tension, you said it. Is it qua between? Tension and je ne sais quoi. Je ne sais tension.
But I think you're saying about whether is it worth it. I think it is. You know, I think it is worth it. But I think you have to be more selective. And I think it's there's a narrower. I think it's a narrower area where it's probably worthwhile. And I think it depends.
Picking somewhere where you actually would want to go. I mean, that's a really good advice. I think so. You think? Yeah. Oh, actually, I'd quite like to go there for a day, and I can just go to the festival. And if it's rubbish, I can go and have some pims by the river.
Yeah, exactly.
Wherever it is, if they sell that. Awesome. I want some garlic bread on the in the
Seine.
Awesome. Some spaghetti in around the Pope's house in the Trevi Fountain. I can have some spaghetti in the Trevi Fountain,
which is in no way a cliche of that's what Italians do, isn't it?
It's not actually water. It's spaghetti. The Trevi Fountain is actually spaghetti running so fast it looks like water.
Can I make a legal disclaimer then? I am in no way affiliated with the Merit Makes a Movie podcast.
Which is good. Now we've almost got a C plot now.
What, the legal ramifications?
Yeah.
Oh, this is where we introduce Paul's lawyer.
Does this constitute hate crime?
Only if people listen to it.
Okay, we're in the clear. Well, if people want to look up your stuff, Paul, and see the short films, you've got a website, have you?
Yeah, I'm a bit spread out. So, I think YouTube, My 70s Vlogs on there, and then 33 Story, I think it's called, on YouTube. That was where a lot of my other stuff is on, the production company we used to do.
So follow those channels and subscribe to those channels, please.
Thanks.
Anything else about films, short films?
No, I'll probably think of some more stuff about festivals afterwards.
And people will never know. People will never know what that stuff is.
No.
I'll be in jail by then. I'll be in an Italian prison. You'll be probably getting off with loads of people at festivals. At Brian's Bum Festival. And the listener will say, right, well, I will unsubscribe from that podcast. And that's where we will leave you. Thank you for your time, Paul.
No problem.
And remember, everyone, stay hygienic.
Marek makes a movie.
Marek makes a movie.
Thank you.